Metro Access Subcommittee, January 17th, 2017.
I'm Charlie Crawford from Montgomery County and also Access for All.
Kevin Banerjee from Northern Virginia. I'm also chairman of the Fairfax Area Disability Services Board.
Stephanie Thorne, Metro Access.
Jennifer Blake, Metro Access.
David Schaefer, ADA Policy and Planning.
Janice Fitzhugh, Metro Access.
Celise Little, Metro Access.
Irvin Fryer, Metro Access.
Jen Weber, MTM.
Bernice Anderson, Diamond Transportation.
Terry Thompson, National Express.
Calvin Crocker, Metro Access client.
James Lewis, MV Transportation.
John Gray, MV Transportation.
Mike Rademacher, MV Transportation.
David Siedentoff, MV Transportation.
Tiffany Neal, First Transit.
Eddie Cranford, First Transit.
Stu Livensparger, First Transit.
My Hobart, Washington, D.C.
Albert Freeman, Suitland, Maryland.
And I see Mr. Worth is in the audience. Topic of interest on my agenda today. So, first thing we're going to go for is review of agenda. Any changes and additions? I will say this. I did ask Metro Access staff to have a updated report about Inauguration Day and travel, and I'm presuming Ms. Anderson will give updated information about how this is going to be communicated to customers, and we're going to do that during new business. And also, I heard there's a public hearing at the end of the month on the 30th, and we do need to discuss that since there's only one date and how we're going to approach that as a group since that's urgent and coming up. Hearing that, I think this makes this a full agenda without any other items. Any other input? Because that'll be it for the agenda, and hopefully we can get this all done by 6.
Move adoption.
We're going to move the agenda as adopted. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays? Any abstentions? Yes, happen. Quickly, please.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we have a quorum to even vote for it. We've got only 4 members out of, we need at least half of them.
But I believe in our many meetings of years ago, we said even if there's not enough people, we still can move along and do what needs to be done. It's like when we come to a vote for something, that is. But adding things to the agenda doesn't require a majority. Thank you. So there's no abstentions. We're going to move with the agenda as amended. Ms. Bellamy, we just added to the agenda the public hearing at the end of the month and updates from Inauguration Day, just to give you FYI. Next is minutes prior from the meeting from last month. Sure, everyone's reviewed the minutes that were sent in advance. Are there any additions, subtractions, corrections? Please let me know now or discuss them. If not, I hear the crickets. All those in favor to move the minutes from last month in December as is, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions. The motion carries to move the minutes forward as is. Next is going to be customer service and outreach reports.
Thank you, Mr. Shumelfort. Good evening, everyone. At this time, I would like to have Ms. Jen Weber from MTM give the customer service report from last meeting.
And just before you do that, I'm going to let Ms. Bellamy introduce herself.
Good afternoon. I'm Carolyn Bellamy. I'm a Montgomery County resident.
All right.
Thank you.
Good evening. The December subcommittee, there were 5 public comments, and all customers have been spoken with afterwards. Their issues have been addressed to their satisfaction.
Thank you. Any outreach reports?
We don't have any outreach to report for this session. Most during the holidays, we kind of have a lull, but we expect to have a report for next session.
Oh, I think there'll be some outreach for this week, but that's a different type.
Absolutely.
So now, with further ado, we're going to go with the Metro Access Severe Weather Protocol. Who will be presenting that?
Well, actually, we do have a Michael Wilson Award presentation.
I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
Diamond Transportation is going to make that presentation today.
All right.
Okay, I'd like to bring Belkis up. First of all, this is quite an honor to be presenting the Michael Wilson Award this year. I think this is the first time or tonight that we've been able to do it directly, so I think this is great. Tonight's award recipient is Belkis Maldonado, who I've known for quite some time, 11 years now. Belkis has been part of the Diamond Transportation family since March 22nd of 2006. Since Ms. Maldonado began her employment, she's completed 15,240 trips with an on-time performance rate of 97%. Ms. Maldonado has not been involved in any reportable incidents. Since her tenure with Diamond Transportation, she has demonstrated pride in her work ethics and has always reports to duty early. She displays a professional attitude and is always smiling, as you can see. She has also received 24 accommodations during her employment with no valid complaints. Ms. Maldonado attends all Diamond Transportation safety meetings and is constantly striving to meet all the needs and expectations of our clients and our client. Ms. Maldonado has had many opportunities to advance, but enjoys her daily route and enjoys her customers. She conveys a message of safety throughout her polished appearance, daily performances, and compassion for her customers she encounters. All of the accommodations that she has received reflect upon her safe driving skills and professional manner. Her personality is very cooperative, and she works well with others and adds a positive environment. From the onset, she stood out among the rest as a distinct individual, impressing her peers and management with an unwavering commitment to perform her duties. She's made an amazing contribution to Diamond Transportation and the services for the disability community, and we enjoy having such an inspirational individual working with us. Ms. Belkis Maldonado. Very good. So I think this is a time for a photo op here. Bernice, if you can come on up.
Got it?
Okay, thank you very much.
I would also like to say, on behalf of Metro Access, thank you, Ms. Maldonado, for all your service throughout the years. It's greatly appreciated. And congratulations on your award.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So next, we have our agenda, the Metro Access Severe Weather Protocol.
Good evening, everyone. William Proctor from Metro Access. I'm going to give you an overview of the severe weather plan for Metro Access services. The severe weather plan is divided into 6 phases. Alert phase, phases 1 through 4, and then there's a recovery phase. I'll go through each one in a moment. But the overview or the purpose of the severe weather operation and procedures is intended to provide safe and reliable transportation for all Metro Access customers. We generally follow the established WMATA policies governing bus service as well as Metro Rail service under severe weather conditions. However, Metro Access service warrants additional consideration for the unique challenges that we encounter on a day-to-day basis based on our customers. The fact that Metro Access operates on secondary and side streets can also impact the availability of Metro Access service during severe weather, inclement weather. So unless these roadways, sidewalks, pathways are clear, they may limit the service that we can provide, specifically on main roads and highways leading into communities, leading into different centers and facilities and things like that. All right. During severe weather conditions, the goal of Metro Access is to transport customers to their requested destinations as long as it is safe to do so. Okay, that will affect the different operation levels in which we operate under. Generally, when weather conditions do not allow for safe transportation, outbound trips are discontinued and only return trips are provided. Customers are notified if their trips are canceled, if the policy of Metro Access services to attempt to operate all return or inbound trips before Metro Access operations are discontinued. So we're not going to leave anyone stranded. We're going to try to get everyone home, just will not offer any outgoing trips. Okay. So the first phase is the alert phase. The alert phase consists of operations continuing at the normal scheduled service. All responses are triggered by forecast advisories, in event of a snow event, up to 2 inches of snow within 12 hours, or up to 4 inches of snow within 24 hours. We're in the alert phase. IVR and e-alert text messages will go out, alerting our customers what phase we're in, advising them to plan their travel accordingly. The next phase would be operation phase level one. During operation phase level one, operations continue normally, scheduled service. Again, responses are triggered by forecasts as well as National Weather Service advisories. Up to 2 inches of existing snow or as much as 4 inches forecast, icy conditions, freezing rain, tropical storm or hurricane warning, the 36-hour notice. Again, this is all information we're gathering by the National Weather Service. Okay? Let me just point out, at each operations phase, IVR and e-alert text messages will be posted, alerting customers to plan accordingly. In the event that service is suspended or reduced, those alerts will notify the customers as well. Operation phase level two, outbound trips curtailed. We're basing this again off of the forecasted weather conditions, the expected or the predicted weather changes to the weather. 2 to 4 inches of existing snow, up to 6 inches forecast, icy conditions, tropical storm conditions forecast within the last 24 hours. Let me just point out, during each operations phase, the Metro Access team, we are in constant communication with all of the service delivery providers, contractors, requiring reports. In the alert phase, reports can begin and continue every 3 hours. Continuing into operations phase two and or three, it can be required every 2 hours or even 1 hour, depending on the changes in the weather conditions. All right. Operations phase level three. Service is restricted to home or return trips, trips to which customers could not be reached by telephone, and those determined to be critical for the safety of our customers on a case-to-case basis. Just want to point out, it has to be safe in order for us to transport the customers. That's our number one priority. So in all of the decision-making and all of the levels or phases, levels in which we operate in, safety is the number one consideration. Operation phase level three, again, service is restricted to home or return trips. 4 to 6 inches of existing snow or ice is accumulating. Roads are beginning to be a little more difficult to traverse on, maybe impassable in some areas, specifically in the communities and places such as that. IVR messages and e-alerts are continuously posted throughout the severe weather event. They're updated accordingly. Next level is operations phase level four, suspension of service. And basically what this means is due to safety concerns, Metro Access service will be suspended and all trips will be canceled. Okay. Forecasted projections over 6 inches of existing snow or 1 inch of solid ice with more forecasted. Strong tropical storm conditions exist, specifically greater than 35 mile per hour winds or hurricane conditions forecasted over the next 3 hours. The next phase, this is the recovery phase. And the recovery phase is operations are resumed. There may be some limitations or restrictions as far as the service area based on the conditions of the roads in communities, developments, things such as that, as well as the highways and interstates. Service is restored, again, based on road conditions, available equipment and personnel. Supplies are restocked and divisions are prepared for full service. So during the reporting phase, which I mentioned earlier, all of the contractors, once we begin to speak about the recovery phase, the contractors will make sure that the vans are ready for service, they're fueled, the lights are clear, that they've contacted the operators and the support staff are on site to begin restoration of normal operations. Okay. The Metro Access team is divided into Metro Access group is divided into two teams, providing 24-hour coverage throughout the event, 12-hour shifts. The teams coordinate with the service delivery providers, the contractors, as well as the OCC included, giving updates on weather conditions as we receive them from Office of Emergency Management, the National Weather Service. So as we get the updates, we're forwarded to the different providers, and they're planned accordingly. They will have staff out monitoring real-time different sites, different locations, reporting back on road conditions, difficult areas where to travel when there's snow or ice. They'll check centers, they'll check facilities, basically giving us real-time information as far as what's going on the road. All right. So, and again, this is 24-hour coverage, two shifts, 12 midnight till 12 in the afternoon, then 12 in the afternoon until 12 midnight. The teams are composed of Mr. June, the director, Mr. Shrugs, the assistant director, as well as the managers, as well as the service monitors, Mr. Davis, the acting fleet maintenance officer, our PCO team. Everyone is contributing to resume normal operations to keep the customers informed, to update the service delivery providers where we are and how we plan to recover and resume normal operations. I'll take any questions if anyone has any.
So the way we do questions is if there are questions from the audience as it relates to this topic, as to relate to this topic, because there's a customer comment period. Sure. Raise your hand and staff will come to you with customer cards to write down your question and field them to me so I can facilitate and ask staff. So amongst subcommittee members, who would like to have questions about the Metro Access Severe Weather Protocol? Well, I guess seeing crickets here, I'll start off by saying, from what I've noticed with suspension of service and recovery, y'all typically tend to recover, if I'm not correct, a combination of factors, you know, when the vehicles are ready, de-iced and everything. I've noticed the time of day tends to be, I'm presuming when it's above freezing, usually around 10 a.m. noontime usually. Y'all usually don't do it that early in the morning because you have to give consideration to the temperature, if I'm correct.
That,
along with other factors.
Exactly. But the conversation starts well before we even plan or contact the service delivery providers as far as the recovery phase. So the de-icing, which you mentioned, and the reports as far as street clearance and things like that plays a major part. We can be ready to begin service, but if the roads are not clear, and the pathways are not clear, we can't safely transport our customers. So specifically, we want to make sure that the snow equipment is out of the way, the lanes are clear and passable. Hopefully we can see pavement. Doesn't always work that way, but we want to eliminate any slip sliding of the vehicles and things like that.
And also,
we want to make sure that our employees obviously can get in safely as well to begin service, especially, say, for instance, with the OCC.
Mm-hmm.
So that plays also a part in the decision.
And also you may want to explain, because in the past, from at least from my experience, the service probably may not be door-to-door to inclement weather. It probably would be curb-to-curb. And how does that play out?
That is true. Within the customer guide, mm-hmm. It does state that there needs to be a clear and accessible path. And if there is not a clear and accessible path, then that location could be considered curb to curb. But if the operator gets there and finds that it is not door-to-door serviceable, they are to contact the OCC, and the OCC contacts the customer to inform them that at this time their location is not door-to-door serviceable, but that the operator is waiting at the curb for them.
All right. Questions from anyone else?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Thank you. I think the primary consideration that I would have with regards to this issue is there is that time period in which it's really not all that certain as to what's going to happen, and the consumer is faced with a whether to cancel or not their own trip. Assuming that they do not cancel that trip, then they're basically in a situation where you guys make the decisions as to the relative safety and predictability of the person being able to travel safely that day. And during that time when it's really up to you guys, what criteria do you use to make a decision and advise the consumers?
Well, the criteria that's used is based on what's going on right now, specifically as it relates to the weather, the road conditions, the forecasted conditions, real-time information based on the driving environment, things such as that, how much snow, ice, sleet is falling at that particular time. I do want to stress and emphasize again, there's the no strand policy. We're not going to leave anyone out there. We're going to operate safely and get everyone back in on their return trips.
I would also say, along with that, that in our assessment, we are also looking at if we are going to transport customers from their home or their safe location, that we feel confident that we would be able to get them back. If we don't feel confident that to start service, that the weather situation will deteriorate such that we will not be able to safely get our customers back, that's going to play a part in the decision whether or not to begin service or not.
All right, thank you. Anyone else? All right, hearing no one else. Thank you so much for this comprehensive report. As we know, well, we'll see what happens with this season and see how it plays out. But I will commend that in the past, y'all have done a very good job of accurate predictions in key major events such as last January, but with the preemptive decision to shut down that weekend of that end of January for that major snowstorm. And pretty much canceling out that Friday because the weather service was right on key. It was going to happen at noon. So why start people out when, you know, you're going to have heavy snow coming down? You know, things like Sandy preeminently shutting it down because we knew this was coming. And it happened. So, and I know y'all don't take decisions to shut down service, you know, preemptively for the next day, you know, considering, you have to consider a lot of factors.
Sure, absolutely.
So, given that, we're going to move on to the next topic, meet your service delivery provider, Diamond.
Yes, we have Diamond Transportation with us today, and we will have three presenters, Ms. Bernice Anderson, of course, the illustrious Mr. Robbie Wirtz, and also Mr. Terry Thompson.
Hello, everybody. My name is Bernice Anderson. I'm the project manager with Diamond Transportation. I've been with Metro Access Service since 2004. I've worked with a lot of you on this committee, and it's just not a job for me. It's commitment. We have put in certain things into place to improve service. First of all, we've added additional staff to our front-end staff and also added more cadet and BTW trainers to help recruit operators. My mother is a Metro Access customer. My sister-in-law is a current Metro Access customer. And who knows, one day I may be a Metro Access customer. With that said, Mr. June always says that this service needs to be world class. It is my commitment to make sure that that happens. And Mr. Worth, I met in 2007. I've been working with him ever since. He's taught me a lot. He's pushed me to be better. He's taught me a lot. His commitment to the disability community is overwhelming. As you all know, and I want to thank you, Robbie, for showing me the ropes and believing in me.
Thank you, Bernice. My name is Robbie Worth, and I'm the founder of Diamond Transportation Services. And this March 22nd will actually be our 37th year of operation. We're incorporated separately from the origins of the old Diamond Cab Company in Arlington and Alexandria to provide an employee-based business model so we could have absolute control of the employees and all their activities. Diamond has an illustrious history in the region, and we operate really exclusively in the Washington metropolitan region. And we've won 12 local, national, and regional awards. And we have were awarded this past year, or 2015, the Richard Hettinger Award, which, as I classified at that time, was the Super Bowl of awards as far as I was concerned. As I said, the company was started as part of a taxi company that used independent contractors, because I felt we had to have an employee-based business model for contracting for persons with disabilities. In 1984, we were the first company in the state of Virginia and in the Washington metropolitan area to offer wheelchair accessible taxi service. Later that year, when the Dash bus service got put on in the city of Alexandria, they didn't want to make it wheelchair accessible, which they could do at that time according to the 504 Rehab Act. Diamond stepped up and offered the first of its kind door-to-door transportation service for people who were eligible that had disabilities and could not access either the bus route or get on the bus when they avail themselves. In 1987, we expanded into Arlington County, where we participated in the full integration of the intellectual disability community into society by providing a bus that picked up clients at their residences and also at residential homes and took them to a facility where they would work during the day. And that started as one vehicle, and we still have that contract to this day, and it operates 14 vehicles in Arlington County. In 1990, there was a movement in the city of Alexandria, there was a movement in Arlington to have a similar service in Arlington County to the Alexandria Dock service, and that started out as Arlington Access, and today it's known as STAR, which is Specialized Transportation for Arlington Residents. And that, again, is a door-to-door service. And the STAR service, we also participated in enhancements to that program. Temporary STAR it is a program that, as your application is here at WMATA, you have to be approved for STAR through the WMATA certification for Metro Access. So while that application is in play, you can still get service as long as the application has been held. And also Interim STAR is a service. If you say you need the service but haven't applied, you can also get service on a temporary basis. And those were very innovative. In 2003, we started a program in Arlington County that integrated Medicaid waiver and non-Medicaid waiver clients on the same vehicle, which is the first of its kind coordination of services for both groups of clients. And we were able to reduce the cost, overall cost, by gaining more ridership and using funding from Arlington and also the state of Virginia. And then in 2005, with the vehicles that we were running in the morning and in the afternoon, we started a demonstration project for a senior loop program where we used vehicles in the morning and afternoon for people with intellectual disabilities to get to and from work. And in the midday, we went to a senior high rise, the Carlin House and the Culpeper Gardens in Arlington. And that was wildly successful, and there was funded by Arlington County, and today we operate 7 different loops. Every day of the week, we operate a different loop, different parts of the county. So, as I said before, Diamond started its road down with Metro Access in 1993 when we were awarded the contract. The service that started in 1994, and in 2006, we were a subcontractor with MV Transportation. We started out with 15 vehicles, and we expanded to 90 vehicles by the time that subcontract was over. Between 2013 and 2015, we've renewed all of our contracts. They're all now on 10-year models with different 5-year bases with different variations for renewals, and that's for the Metro Access service, the STAR service, the Arlington IDES service, and senior loop services. They're all renewed and fully operational for the foreseeable future. One other thing that I'd like to point out is I had the opportunity in 2013 to be selected to train the DC taxicab drivers in the DC Roll program, which was to bring the first accessible taxis to the Washington DC, which was a highly successful program. And in 2017, this year, within a couple of months, we're rolling out in Fairfax County, TAP for your county, we're rolling out a new program called Ride Source that will also integrate waiver and non-waiver clients, similar to the model that we brought. We have a grant for that, an enhanced mobility grant, to do that service. Diamond currently operates 100 vehicles for Metro Access, and we operate two dispatch centers in Springfield and Lorton. We have a training program that's 110 hours and a safety program that is, I think, one of the highest standards that in the Washington metropolitan area. For example, we went 2 years recently without having a customer injury on one of our vehicles. Some of our goals are operator engagement, proactive management, and also, as Ms. Anderson pointed out, we have very consistent management that's been with the project pretty much the whole time since we started, and that's a real factor in providing consistent service. So in order to ensure that the Diamond legacy and commitment to the community will continue for generations to come, Diamond has selected National Express Transit, the fastest growing transit contracting company in North America, as the new owner of Diamond. National Express, the parent company, has committed to the same path of excellence that the company has traveled in the past. They have committed to excellence. They have a commitment to excellence, safety, customers, people, and the community. And we look forward to the continued success and growth together as the current dedicated management and operational personnel remain in place. It's not often we find two companies with such strongly aligned corporate values. Diamond's commitment to customers has helped the company build a strong reputation in the paratransit industry, both regionally and nationally. This focus on customer satisfaction will remain and be strengthened with the joint effort of our combined organizations. National Express appreciates the manner in which the business has been conducted and sees the combined effort of Nationals and Diamond's management, operators, and staff improving the way in which we work as a team going forward. As I said in a letter set out, that, you know, I'm not saying goodbye. I'm just saying hello to a new chapter of Diamond Transportation. And it's a great honor and a privilege to introduce Terry Thompson, who's the regional manager for National Express.
Thank you, Robbie. Good evening, committee members. Thank you for allowing us to come before you. My name is Terry Thompson, and I'm the regional manager for National Express. National Express is a global transportation company with over 30,000 employees operating in 36 states. To echo Robbie's sentiments, partnering with Diamond Transportation was the perfect opportunity for National Express to align with an organization that embodied the same core values, which are safety, customers, people, community, and excellence. As part of our transition, we identified four areas of opportunity that we began to address. The first area of opportunity was the operator shortage. It is always our goal to provide world-class service to all Metro Access riders. In order to accomplish this, we must be able to accommodate and perform all assigned routes and trips daily in the safest manner. With that being said, we clearly understand the adverse impact that operator shortages impose on all stakeholders. In December of 2016, we identified a need to increase our staffing levels. As of today, I'm happy to say that we've identified enough operators and we've resolved that issue. We've hired enough operators to resolve that issue. We believe this can be attributed to the aggressive recruiting, hiring, and retention campaign we recently implemented. These newly hired operators will be in service once they've successfully completed training. Moving forward, we will use historical data and seasonal trends to assist with forecasting our operating staffing levels to mitigate this issue from reoccurring. The second area of opportunity is the on-time performance. Our failure to achieve the on-time performance goal is certainly unacceptable. The inconvenience and undue hardship that this places on our riders has the potential of creating a lasting impact on rider confidence. Although we are not where we would like to be, we have seen a steady improvement over the past 3 months. We will continue to take every measure to ensure that our staff is performing their role accordingly. It is our belief that the on-time performance will continue to improve as the operator shortage is resolved. However, we will continue to closely monitor the on-time performance and take proactive steps to ensure we are constantly performing at our highest level daily. The third area of opportunity that we identified were driver wages. As I mentioned earlier, people, or our employees, are one of our core values. Our operators are tasked with performing a highly sensitive job in an extremely dynamic environment. It is our belief that our operators were not being compensated accordingly. Therefore, we made an adjustment to our starting wage. We see this as reinvesting in our people in hopes of attracting and retaining the very best employees. The fourth or last area of opportunity is operator retention. During the initial integration of Diamond Transportation into National Express, we conducted a town hall meeting with all of the employees. One of the primary issues that emerged from the meeting was the length of time it had taken to negotiate the collective bargaining agreement. The frustration created by the uncertainty of future increases and benefits resonated with many of the employees. Understanding the impact that prolonged negotiations can have on employee morale and performance, the team collectively made this a top priority, and we were able to reach an agreement with ATU, which was ratified on January 15, 2017. We're excited about this major accomplishment and believe this and other initiatives mentioned previously will help us significantly improve the service we provide to our riders. National Express is fully committed and excited about this partnership, and we would like to sincerely thank you for this wonderful opportunity to serve our community. That does conclude our presentation. If you have any questions, we'll be more than glad to answer them
so
at this time.
So who will have comments? I see already Denise Reynolds at the microphone. Anyone else besides Ms. Rush? Who wants to comment on the presentation? All right, we'll start with Ms. Rush and see who else rushes to the mic. It is on now.
Okay. Denise Rush. I clapped when softly when you talked about an increase of wages for the drivers. I hope that the other transportation companies do that and follow suit, because that way we will be able to retain drivers a little longer. And the benefits, I hope you listen to what they ask. I know they can't get everything, snap, snap, because that's the way the world is, but something is better than nothing, and I really want to commend you on that. I want to know, what name do we call Diamond, or do we call National Express? What are we going to be calling henceforth?
Diamond Transportation, the Diamond brand will remain intact.
All right, well, thank you.
My question is, I'm last recollecting, what portion, you didn't tell during the presentation, of the Metro Access service do you have? I know Transdev has 50%, and First Transit has a little bit more than y'all, so my recollection is 15%, if I'm correct, around that number, or 20% of the service that you do, which is mostly the Northern Virginia runs?
Yeah, that's correct, Mr. Summerford. We operate 15% of the total service.
Okay. Any questions from any other committee members about Meet Your Provider? Now, I did see the statistics. It's still at the same on-time performance for 83%, but I am very positive that I see you're putting a lot of aggressive initiatives forward, which hopefully will bring up the trends in those numbers in the upcoming months overall.
Yeah, so the trend since November for December and for January is an increase from that number that you just said for November. Mm-hmm. So we are experiencing an increase as we close the gap on the recruitment and the driver retention, and also we're getting drivers that are rebounding that are coming back to the company as well.
All right. Any other questions from committee members? No one from the audience as it relates to this topic. So thank you so much for your presentation. And now we can move on to inauguration communication update.
Thank you, Mr. Semaphore. Just to give the committee a brief synopsis of what we've been working on for the upcoming inauguration. Obviously, communication is key with our customers. We have posted IVR messaging on the Metro Access Operations Control Center main number to alert customers to the impending traffic and road closures that are, of course, going to ensue with the inauguration around the mall. I just want to make it a point to say that some customers, we've been receiving some calls that customers think that our service is going to be closed. That is definitely not the case. We are operating under our normal service hours within our normal service area. However, due to the road closures and vehicle restrictions around the National Mall and the surrounding area, obviously we will not be able to have our vehicles traverse through that area or across, you know, the mall, say, to get to the other side. But we have detour information and whatnot for our drivers to be able to navigate throughout. Also, we are putting out robocalls. The first one went out last night to our subscription customers. There'll be another one going out midweek, probably, I think, Thursday. We'll have another one, or no, Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday night. We'll have another robocall going out. We have Metro Alerts also going out. The first one went out this afternoon. We'll have another one again going out, I think, around the Wednesday time frame. We also have posted a service advisory, which gives customers a little bit more detail as to what's going on with the inaugural activities. If you call into the Metro Access main line and press option 7 and pound 5, you'll get all that information that is posted for our customers. Also, for our visiting customers within the metropolitan area, and this is metro-wide, if they text POTUS, P-O-T-U-S, to 90360, they'll also be able to receive Metro inauguration service info and alerts. So there's various, obviously, on our website we have various information
now,
too.
I thank you for all of this. I do want to add some additional information. I found this out this morning. You and from past inauguration experiences, given that there will be world closures, some of them can happen as early as Thursday afternoon into the evening. To obviously, you know, the culminating event is Friday. You may want to keep customers aware of that. Like I found out when I got back in town this morning, in Union Station in particular, this Thursday evening, access to it will be limited, and they already put up the blockades there. So where customers are normally dropped off and picked up for Amtrak, they're only going to allow limited access to one part of the station because Trump is having dinner there that evening. So you do want to keep in mind of all these events, because that's around the area obviously is going to be of, you know, high security concern, you know, and of course a lot of it's just rolling, so you won't know until that day exactly what streets. And maybe you may want to advise customers that you may expect some delays starting Thursday, definitely Friday, and Saturday too, given protests. Just kind of alert customers. It's not only Friday. The perception is that this can happen from Thursday probably through the end of Saturday, if not Sunday, if they're projected protests before and after inauguration. Just put that out there.
Yes, actually, all that information, if the customer does that option 7, pound 5, all those particular pieces of information you just recited is all there, right, with the times and dates of potential vehicle restrictions in those particular areas.
And also, I do suggest also is all of particularly, obviously, dispatch and Where's My Ride staff aware of these details as customers call in and they find out that where I got dropped off, I may not be able to get picked up as changes happen during these next few days, probably starting Thursday through the weekend.
Absolutely.
You know, because my last recollection is telling the driver to try to get there and the driver's like, it's blocked, and they need to explain, you know, that to the customer.
Right, and it's going to be very important for our customers to make sure that their contact information is updated. I mean, we're going to take every recourse possible to find contact numbers for customers should we need to do that. We have the ability, if we find out that a particular part of the city is going to be compromised, to find out what trips are there, and we will be making direct calls to those customers to work with them to ensure that we get them picked up as close, if not at the location they requested.
All right. Doris, do you have comments as it relates to this Inauguration Day update? And also, you introduce yourself at the same time.
My name is Doris Ray, and I am a member of the AAC living in Fairfax County. Yes, I do want to say, Mr. Chair, that I'm really concerned after what it took to get to this meeting from Judiciary Square Metro, and what I'm sure everybody here probably knows is in front of this building, that even if this is not a metro issue, this is not a metro access issue, but it's something that people will face, even if people get there, the kinds of barriers they're putting up this year, and it seems to me it's the first year I've seen this kind of thing. I know that there were big barriers 4 years ago, but this is the worst I've ever seen. And they block curb ramps, and so consequently, I think there's going to be a big problem for people, and it is not necessarily going to be Metro Access or Metro Rail's problem or WMATA's problem, but I think there needs to be some communication, because there is a dangerous situation at the curb ramps crossing from Judiciary Square over here, over to the building museum side, and then once again when you're crossing here, what in God's name is it going to be down on Constitution or wherever else the inaugural proceedings are? So I'm actually very concerned about the neglect of attention to access for any people with disabilities, whether they're just rolling around or whether they're coming off the rail or whether they're using Metro Access. So, and you know, I mean, I don't know what to say to do about that. I also want to make you aware and make my concerns that I didn't hear a thing from about the Diamond presentation, which disturbs me as a Northern Virginia. This, again, the staff of this committee is wonderful and spectacular, but there's something wrong with the assisted listening system, and I know that if a sign language interpreter didn't show up, we would shut down the meeting by protocols that we've had in place for a long time. Well, this isn't, I mean, this is horrible. It's just horrible. There's something wrong with it. I can't even hear it through the system. So
all right,
I want to let the chair know that. I want to say again that the staff of this committee and of the whole department is doing everything it can on its part. But
all right, Mr. Blake is going to.
But I do want to.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to that. Say for the record. Yes, the gates that you, the fence that you see in front of our building and in front of Judiciary Square, F Street entrance, were placed there by Secret Service, not Metro, as Doris stated. But I have communicated with our police department, who's been in contact with these individuals. This is going all over all over this perimeter, so it's not just here. But we did send an official communication from my office to the chief of police that the way the Secret Service has installed the fence is a violation of the ADA. So I've asked them, unless they're going to close this off to everyone, and the way they've installed the fence, you have a little entrance in both fences, across the street and here, which clearly means that this is not closed off yet to everyone. So until they do that, I've asked them to move the fence back 2 feet to allow people with wheelchairs and other people with disabilities a clear path of travel, both across the street, which is not Metro's property, or in front of our building, which where the fence is actually public right-of-way, but it's impacting access to this facility. What Secret Service said is that their contractor works at night, so if you were here yesterday in the afternoon, that fence out front wasn't there. They came in overnight and just dropped it in the middle of the sidewalk. Hopefully tonight they'll move it back 24 inches as we've asked them to, and we'll see. But that is, as Doris pointed out, I just want to state for the record, Metro has no control over what Secret Service does with their fence, even if it's this close to our property. So we're working with them. We've already put it in the strongest of terms. They're violating federal law. We'll see if that makes them act.
Thank you. Any other comments as it relates to inauguration in terms of the communication to customers? Go ahead, Mr. Proctor.
I just wanted to add, in regards to the official ADA drop-off, at this point, as of today, is it still 7th and E, Southwest?
Yes.
That's as of today. It's changed twice so far, but as of now, it's still 7th and E, Southwest.
All right.
And it's still scheduled to, not scheduled to change, but could probably change, depending on the protests and things like that. So.
Okay. But just the main thing, keeping customers aware that it's not only Friday, it's probably going to be Thursday going through possibly the end of the weekend, so to speak. People generally aware that there will be delays so that they understand that this process is a multi-day process, not just on Friday. Next on the list is public hearing.
Hold on 1 second. Can I?
Charlie. Oh, before we move on, Charlie, you have a comment as it relates to this?
Well, I have a question. I don't know.
Go ahead.
Is this, maybe this doesn't apply to this meeting, but I'm concerned about. I won't share my feelings about the inauguration because it would be counterproductive.
Okay.
But.
As it relates to the topic of access and communicating to Metro Access customers, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that there will be some customers who are going to want to participate in the various activities, either pro or con, the inauguration, and the extent to which these barriers present access problems for folks could be a pretty dangerous situation. So does anybody have any idea of how this thing will play out in terms of cooperation and moving stuff in a reasonable way?
Well, I think Mr. Blake started to explain some things about what they requested in terms of its legal sense. Did you have anything else to offer to Charlie's question to respond to it?
How the inauguration is going to play out?
To his question, actually.
Repeat your question, Ron. I'm sorry. Repeat your question, Charlie.
The question is, do you have any idea to the extent there will be mitigation on the part of the people responsible for the inauguration in the city to ensure that folks with disabilities are able to access the environment?
Oh, no, I cannot speak for what the Secret Service is going to do or Homeland Security is going to do. This fence, this will be my second inauguration here, and I've never seen a fence like that put up, and I hear that's just the first one. By tonight, similar fencing is supposed to be around this building and other areas. We'll see. So again, the only thing I could do is tell them that they're breaking the law and see if that scares them into doing the right thing. But no, in the end, it's going to be the Secret Service and the Homeland Security who has to follow the law. Now, again, once it gets to a point where they say, you know, the sidewalk up front is off limits to everybody, then that's off limits to everybody. But when you have it open to ambulatory individuals, then you're breaking the law when you're creating a barrier for some people. So we've told them that. We put it in writing, and we'll see what they're going to do.
Okay, Doris?
Yeah, I just wanted to say when you do that it is actually illegal to block a curb ramp. And the thing that was the worst thing was that the ones that are up around here, the building museum and at your building, for some reason they're blocking the curb ramps instead of making that where there's the opening is, and I just honestly don't understand it. And then they have a big, the way they're built, they have these big plates so that even, you know, it's in no way any kind of ramp. So to get across and outside, but where they made the opening, for example, which is if you're facing the building museum left of that, or you have to go all the way around it at the corner of what is this, G and 5th? Yeah. I don't understand they're not paying any attention to those protocols and the law under the ADA and city law. So, but like I said, it to block a curb ramp is illegal.
All right. Thank you so much for everyone's feedback on this issue. Again, Metro Access staff will continue to monitor and proactively notify customers by all reasonable means about travel service as we get into this inauguration weekend. Like I said, starting Thursday on end, if not before, continuing throughout the week. Now, next, we wanted to discuss the public hearing that's I heard a date is coming out. If someone has information, B is going to talk about that.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Public hearing is going to be on Monday, January 30th, 2017. It is proposed that Metro will have public hearings on the FY18 operating budget and the FY18 capital improvement program and the federal FY2017 grant applications. There will be an open house on Monday, January 3rd, of the public hearing day, from 4:30 to 6:30. The public hearing starts at 5 p.m. and it goes till 9 p.m. It happens here in this building, 600 Fifth Street in Metro's headquarters. There's a few things that members and the public should know, that there will be speaker registration is on site, so you don't have to do any of that type of to speak in advance, to submit your testimony if you want to do something in writing. Metro has two ways to do it. The first way will be through the survey. Survey will be open from 9 a.m. On Saturday to January 14th, 2017, and will close on Monday, February the 6th, 2017 at 9 a.m. So it's a good amount of time for to do that. So if you wanted to do that, the survey is available. If you wanted to actually do the old-fashioned snail mail, you can still send your information or your testimony to the Office of the Secretary here at Metro Headquarters on 600 Fifth Street. We have the full document outside here on the table if anybody is interested. It has it there as well as all the email addresses and information for customers, including if you need any special assistance or accommodations, the contact information to call.
Now, seeing that we don't have an AAC meeting to discuss this as a big group, and this is coming obviously very soon, my suggestion is we could begin some of the discussions. What are we looking at the priorities to discuss at this public hearing? We can present ourselves as, you know, individual opinions, because we don't have a quorum here to do this AAC tonight, but at least we can discuss some of our big topic concerns. And the importance is that, like the last public hearing cycle, that we show up in full strong force. Is this something that we passionately feel that we're, you know, against in this proposal, because numbers and voices heard does make an impact on the board members as they consider different options. So putting that out there, any feedback from anyone about the public hearings? Denise, I know you're...
Well, yes. The main concern is that when they increase the Metro rail and bus fares, 10 cent, 20 cent, whatever it is, it's double for Metro Access users. The ceiling will not increase. It will stay at 650. But in the middle, the people in the middle, they'll be moving toward the cap. So, for instance, if you're paying 350 now and they increase by 20 cent, then that'll be 40 more cent to your 350. Those are just examples. And we are concerned that the service over the year has not been great with Metro. Bus has been pretty good, but Metro service on the rail, every day something has happened. People are delayed work and getting home and inconvenienced. And we do have to make the repairs. So we need numbers to come down and give your opinions, you know.
All right.
It affects each person individually differently. So we suggest you write in or come down and express your concern.
All right. I'm going to first do Ms. Bellamy and then go back to Doris and anyone else. So Ms. Bellamy, you're first, and then Doris, you're next.
My concern is that we are not thinking about the elderly. They are on fixed incomes. We've gone up tremendously. My fear, which I've been talking about it for the last 3 years, we're going to get to $10. We're already at $6.50. The ones in the middle or the bottom are not getting a raise. They're raising Metro Access. What happened? I know it's not supposed to be a business, but there's some people that will not be able to afford 50 cents or 30 more cents. If you go into dialysis, and I've said this for years, and you go in three times a week, you can't pay to ride. We've got to do something to offset so our people, and I'm talking about our elderly, can ride Metro Access. We want them to be able to ride. That's what it was based on originally. We've forgotten what Metro Access really is. It's to transport the sick and the elderly. Usually if you live to be 80 or 90 years old, there's something wrong. We'll never find a 90-year-old woman completely healthy. We've forgotten what all this is about. So we need to be there in force. We did it before. We can do it again. We need volume again, like we did in 2004. Some of you don't remember it, but I do. We need to get people out, because it could be one of us. At the rate it's going up, in the next 5 years, I will be able to ride.
Thank you. Doris, as it relates to the public hearings?
Yes. With regard to the public hearings, I think the last two speakers are absolutely correct. Although it does affect all of us as persons with disabilities, even those who are seniors who continue to ride fixed route. And so there is a very simple solution that I hope we put up right up front in testimony, and that is that there should not be an increase in fares, whether fixed route or ADA paratransit, that is Metro Access, as long as there isn't a service to go with it. And that the neglect that has caused things to get where they are on the maintenance side has been going on even in the bountiful years. But it is the customer that is going to be impacted. And on the fixed route side, it means all kinds of delays, not just on the subway, but the closing of the subway early may mean, for example, that people on bus routes that are not operating because of the cutback in hours, they won't be able to get anywhere, for example, on Metro Access because of the alignment with days and times of services. So we have a mutual issue with this, both fixed route and paratransit users, and the easiest solution and the most clear thing that they could do is not raise the fares, especially the fares. The surcharges for other things, that's one thing. But the fares for people with disabilities who have to rely on both the fixed route and the paratransit. And then, yes, give the examples that Ms. Bellamy gave, that Ms. Rush gave, and that others here probably will give. But I think going full force, the whole community saying it's not fair to raise fares when we're not getting the service we need, and in fact it's being cut back. And I do realize, just as much as anyone, because I ride the fixed route every day, that the issue of safety and the need to get it done.
Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
Also, the last three times that we've had these hearings, a lot of people can't come down. I will, if they come or contact me and they cannot pay their Metro Access or their transportation, if you contact me, I will pay for you to come and get home. If you come down here and you have not contacted me, I will be here and see that you get your money back and get home. Come down and testify. I don't care who calls me, and I'll try to have enough money for everybody who cannot afford, but we need to be in numbers. Please, the word will get out, and contact me. Anybody need my number? 301-899-5171. We've got to show that we can't have these increases.
So, what? Go ahead, Charlie.
Mr. Chair, can I just clarify the reason that I said that we should all go saying don't raise the fares is because if the fixed route fares aren't raised, your fares won't be raised.
Thank you. Okay, Charlie, go ahead.
It's as simple as that because that's what the ADA says. That's what you need to know.
Okay, thank you. Charlie, go ahead.
Thank you. I guess I'm feeling really conflicted right now because I really do understand what you folks are saying with regards to the fairs, and it's if you take the long view of history, I mean, people have had to deal with this issue in any number of contexts over the years, and I think it's from my perspective, and I don't have an answer, but I do know that people who are trying to decide these issues in terms of how to run their operation in a way that makes sense for everybody, they don't really have a lot of avenues in which to pursue to get the kind of money that they need to run the operation. And at some point, you can't do more with less. And then how do you get enough money to do that? And so, like I said, I don't really have an answer, but I do have an appreciation for everybody's problem here, and so I guess I'll just shut up because I don't have an answer.
I think tapping, I want to give other people a chance.
Mr. Chairman, just thinking, based on our bylaws, we as a group, AAC, can we represent ourselves with a speaker to be present and make a presentation on the people who are using, like seniors and disabled people using the both paratransit and the fixed route, and make a presentation? Is it legal?
Oh, to say as a
committee members, as a spokesperson for AAC?
It's my understanding that it should have been done, well, even though it's been done at the AAC level, I'm not even sure we have a quorum to, because we would have to get this done like tonight and iron everything out, and that won't happen probably because we have to get out by 6 and still have customer comments.
Then I'm just in a legal way. Can we have a spokesperson for this hearing?
Like what we did in the previous hearing,
on behalf of AAC,
we can speak as individuals, and
that.
You can identify yourself as an AAC member. I would do it that way, but it's your personal opinion.
Okay.
What I can do is send an email out to all the AAC members to inform them, hey, this is public hearings. Yeah. You know,
Mr. Blake knows all this.
Consider these points, these talking points.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'm
go ahead.
Sorry, this
yes.
is B. I just want you to know that we did send information out to the AAC earlier today about public hearings and how to lodge your points to the board. It usually is an individual comment that can be made. The AA speaks through the chair.
Which is Patrick.
And, yes, which is Patrick.
Right.
And
through
the board report is where the AAC normally will speak to them. But we did send members the information about the public hearing.
So the Patrick cannot speak on behalf of the AAC as a chairman to the public hearing, but we could send to the board as we do.
Process. Yes, we usually send information from the AAC to the board through the chairman's report.
Good.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead, Ms. Bellamy. And then go ahead.
This is not a rich transportation. We don't have people who make a lot of money. A lot of our people are everyday workers. I mean, they make an everyday salary. If you got money, you could ride Uber if you want to. Or you can have somebody drive you. I'm talking about people who don't have a lot of money, which we're supposed to be representing. The poor, the shut in, with disability, and the elderly. Years ago, Social Security was only $250. Not that far behind me. Come on. Why are we sitting here if we're not going to represent our parents, our grandparents? Our uncles and aunts, we can't stand too much of our eyes. I know people that Ms. Rush knows that she's been helping who are visually impaired, who can't pay their monthly bills but gotta go to dialysis. I have to say this about her. She's paying for a lot of people every single month. I know this to be true. It's getting where we have to think about our elderly. I mean, I understand this cannot run on its own. And I've been told 1,000 times as an advocate, this is not for you if you can't afford it, in a nice way. But it's supposed to be for people to be able to move around, to be free. Once we get everybody on the bottom to the top, where I am, where Ms. Rush is, what are we going to do for people that can't afford it? I'm tired of preaching. Don't somebody tell me I'm preaching.
Like I said, I will put out to everyone the public hearing on the AAC. I'll make a push every about twice a week saying, please come out, speak your opinions, look at the board report. You can use that as a basis, as some of the AAC opinions as it is around this particular issue, and, particularly echo those. I'm sure some of us might come out with some talking points, like myself or Phil, in a couple of days, is to look at, and, you can use those individually. The more they hear the sort of the same message, it kind of resonate and clicks. I've seen this happen in the past. So, having said that,
process question.
Having said that, go ahead, Doris. We're going to take you as the last note.
And this is a process question.
Go ahead.
So, Dr. B, if the AAC, after these hearings, wishes to submit, for example, to the board a letter with basically written testimony from the AAC as a body that we could vote on either at the February meeting or whenever the committee of the whole is together, are we able to do that in a timely way so that it will get into the deliberations, even if it's not on the individual deadline for written testimony of February 6th? Is that something that the AAC as a body can do?
We can write and do anything that we choose to do after the hearings, but
right.
This is a good point that we need to pay attention now that some of these meetings that we have been having, when we should have been talking about the talking points
right.
and what to present, we didn't. And we can't continue to let this happen, because when it started, I was paying $2.25. Then it went to $2.50. Then it went to $3. And because the AAC and the members didn't pay attention, went to $7. Then we paid attention and we presented and we had great talking points and it went down to $6.50. Okay, so now we're at the cap and they haven't changed the cap in 2 years, 4 years. They haven't changed it. But now everybody in the middle is going to get pregnant because it's going to go up. So we have got to pay attention now. The water has gone under the bridge. Try to attend the hearings if you can. It really should be a requirement. We really need to be there in numbers. I don't want, the last year I offered to pay whoever wanted to come. I paid 10 people's fare. 10 people. That's not enough. We got to be careful. We got to think about the people who really can't afford to pay.
But with respect to the desire to follow up with a written statement by the AAC to the members of the board, if that is something that we can do during this budget, you're early in this budget process, enough that it will have impact. I'm suggesting perhaps, Mr. Chair, that moving, if it would be acceptable, that the Metro Access Subcommittee urge the chair and the full committee to come up with its own written specific position. And meanwhile, since there is an upcoming AFA meeting, Charlie and I perhaps could do the same there.
So, okay.
Well, I would just, if I may just add, I would just say this, Mr. Chairman. the public hearing and specifically talking about the fair, which is what you all are talking about,
mm-hmm.
I would strongly encourage you, if as a group or as individuals, to get your comments in the normal way and before the deadline. As Mr. Rush said, you could kind of say anything you want after the hearing, but if you want your comment in official position to be taken, it needs to be done before the hearing deadline, before the public comment deadline, excuse me.
Which is February.
But how do we vote on that?
Well, we have technology, and Dr. B is, she's shaking her head.
No, there is no
vote on what?
Well, no, I think what she's saying is if somebody drafts a letter saying this is the AAC's position, how would you vote to say that you all agree with it? We've used technology to facilitate your communication before, so that's not impossible. But I would say if you wait till afterwards, and then say we're going to tell the board what we think, I would not recommend that.
Okay.
I would say you could do that in addition to, but if you want your comments to be official and counted like everyone else, I would work as a group, as a team, and you all come up with your position. Dr. B will help you put it on paper and get it in the right time and right means.
Mr. Chair.
So I heard a proposal here. Who's going to put a proposal forward? Or motion, that is.
I'll make the motion. As proposed by Mr. Blake.
But it needs to be an action, a responsible person.
That was given off the record.
Mr. Chair, I have a motion.
Go ahead.
I move that we encourage the AAC membership to consider and vote on a position that would accomplish the goal of allowing for the Metro Access program to continue and to improve without increased cost to the individuals, on the condition that we recommend to Metro that it seek a direct funding stream for its purposes of Metro Access and others, and that we do this knowing that it will take a real advocacy effort, not at Metro, but in the halls of Congress or wherever, where the revenues come from, so that we can get what we need without putting so much stress on the system that it can't meet the expectation. That's my motion.
That's the wrong motion.
So what it sounds like to me, okay.
Summaries.
That y'all want to task, my suggestion is you would probably want, if you want this letter to come by the deadline, which I believe is what, February 6th, right? 9 a.m. So it sounds like you would need to task someone to craft this letter to get it, to get, you know, maybe email feedback and approval before the deadline of the 6th.
As always, I suggest you.
Oh.
As always, I suggest you do it because you've done it in the past,
right,
and we know you'll do it. So don't turn it down.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, this is B. I do also want to remind the committee that they have an opportunity to speak to the board at the upcoming board hearing at the end of this month. I think it's January 26th. It's at 11 a.m.
Thursday, yeah.
So, right. It's Thursday, January 26th. So that if the public or members want to talk to the board directly about it, that is the first opportunity. Members can send comments to AAC Chair Patrick Sheehan and ask him to formulate his response. Is another option that I think members should consider to have their point across about the public hearing.
So what it sounds like is, did you want, someone can put this in a motion, have a conversation with Patrick to see about, putting this... Putting down, formulating a AAC position letter that would be, go before to the board members before this February 6th deadline.
Right.
Does that sound like that?
That's right.
I just told you to do
yes.
it.
Yes. Exactly. I can't make my own motion. I need someone else to do it.
I can't make the motion. Right. So we need
that was the motion that I think we suggested. And now that Charlie kind of summarized it a bigger way, I say that I second that motion also.
You already seconded? Well, then you do it.
Okay. And
the major part of the motion really is that we represent a group of people who are affected by the decisions that are made. And because we represent them, we not only have the responsibility to represent them, but we also have the responsibility to talk to them and to mobilize them in ways that will accomplish the result we all seek.
All right.
That's the real issue.
Okay, so so the motion I think, if I offer a friendly amendment, is we have a motion where I speak to the chair, Patrick, about formulating a letter, getting our consolidated position on this public fair hearing that goes to the board by February
6th. That's right.
Also, that's right, exactly. But the further discussion, this does not mean that anybody individually.
It doesn't circumvent anyone's right or privilege to still testify, they should do that.
Right.
Well, can we get the same commitment that you will that the members of the board of the AAC committee will come down to the hearings?
Yeah. All right. So
either come to the hearing or come to the board.
Charlie, do you approve that friendly amendment?
Sure.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Wait a minute. Discussion.
Oh,
discussion.
We
were in the middle of discussion, and I have my hands up.
All right, discussion.
Yes, please. I would like, which I feel is a friendly amendment, that this written statement come from the chair of the Metro Access Committee, and that you can, with that, go ahead with this. But if you go ahead with what has been proposed here, it's doing what you have done each time the budget has come up in the last 4 or 5 years, which is completely dismiss the issues of people who use fixed route, who are people with disabilities and may or may not qualify right now for Metro Access, or maybe using the fixed route in lieu of Metro Access as long as they damn well can to spare money. This issue of raising the fares, while at the same time not just improving services, but the fact that our services on the fixed route, particularly the bus, have been cut back drastically, and that when they go and not caring about raising our fares so that we can stand for an hour waiting for a train or not have any longer a bus that runs once every half an hour, but maybe it runs once an hour and we still have to wait out in the rain and the snow and all the rest of it.
Okay.
There are people with disabilities too. So I suggest that it come from Metro Access because it's not representing everybody. And I want to ask the maker of the motion, what I hear you saying is this motion is not addressing, and the position that you would take is not addressing, am I correct, whether there's a fare increase or not right now. It's addressing finding a different way to fund things so there don't have to be fare increases. Is that what I'm hearing you say? Because that's what I heard you say.
You are partially correct.
Partially. Okay.
But it really addresses the whole issue of people with disabilities riding the subways, riding the buses, and riding Metro Access.
It's not even about just disability people. The Metro, the rail is for everybody.
Right.
Without the increase
is increased across the board, and the service is not.
Let's chime in for a second, because I know the chairman wants to get the public comment. The purpose of my recommendation of having the technological discussion is for you all to have this debate.
Let's go online with this.
I don't think we need to resolve it today. I think when you all draft your letter, you should have this discussion.
I would send us an email. I would collaborate with Patrick. These are the points we will put out. Does anyone have anything else? It's not final, as you saw the last letter we did to the board between me and Patrick, putting it together. We had, all feedback in there.
We have to get an answer also to whether FOIA prohibits us from taking any. It is my understanding, certainly, that that's true, that FOIA prevents us from taking action on email. It has to be done in a public meeting. We're a public body.
Mr. Chairman, just one thing. Based on what we're hearing now and discussion going on, maybe we should get Iraq involved in this too.
Yes.
But the thing right now, we have to get this. If you want as a group, either we try to get this done with feedback.
Iraq support us.
Do the left.
Yes. Oh, Patrick is here. Good. Now, let's do this first. We're having a discussion, but the first thing I would like to do is get to public comment period and get to these people, and then we'll come back and finish this. Good. So let's do public comment, because there's only a few people, and then come back to resolve this discussion. Patrick, we are talking about public hearings at the end of the month, so keep that in mind. First person on the list here is Nicole Miller, so that's what we're doing. We're going through public comment, and we're coming back to finish this topic. So I want to get these people done, because they come with their concerns. Nicole Miller, 3 minutes, please.
Hi. I've been for a long time filing a lot of incident reports, and I've filed at least 6 incident reports in the last 7 days because I've been on the van for 2 or more hours at a time. And I've been made late but I was on the van for over 2 hours, 2 hours today, and it was also, I get these really crazy trips. A lot of the times, I'm paired with people who are the opposite ways down Route 66, and that causes the long trip times. Sometimes I get paired with somebody who's getting picked up or dropped off in Maryland when I'm getting picked up in D.C. and going to Virginia. And it's been happening quite a bit. And I've been working with the Ombudsman's office, and he's trying to resolve the situation, but I've just been getting apology after apology. I've been getting apologies for about 3 years, and things are really coming to a head. And I find it laughable that you guys, the board is proposing a fare increase across the board for Metro Access and bus and rail, but you're demanding more money not to transport people. That's rich.
Thank you for your concern. I think, Ms. Anderson, do you want to respond to that, please?
My name is Felice Little. I'm a service monitor in the Office of Metro Access Service, and I've been reviewing your trips, and I would like to meet with you after the meeting and discuss and go through everything so we can work on improvements to your service. Okay.
Thank you. Next person, bring the mic to Calvin, if I'm saying the last name correctly, Crocker?
Crocker. I apologize.
Crocker. 3 minutes.
Yes, my name is Calvin.
You got the mic? Good. Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Calvin Crocker. And one of my issues is I was
picked up from my home, taken to Citizens Bank on Suitland Road. I live on Suitland Road in Suitland, Maryland. St. Barnabas Road in Suitland, Maryland. They picked me up within the allotted time. They dropped me off there, and they were supposed to pick me up an hour later and didn't pick me up till 3 hours later, sitting in a bank. That's totally unacceptable. Number two, what else did I have on my list, please?
You talked about the meeting.
Someone at your center told me that there was a meeting on last Thursday for this meeting, and that was not scheduled, which I just spoke with Stephanie, and she said that I will be giving back my fare of $13. One other thing, the lady mentioned, just like a lot of us are on fixed income, and I have sometimes scheduled a trip to the grocery store. And from what I hear, there's just a 40-pound limit. And if you buy six sodas, that's 40 pounds. A two-liter soda weighs about 8 pounds. And being on a fixed income, that should be raised to some degree, because we can't afford to take that trip three or four times a month just for your 30 pounds of food.
All right. Thank you, sir. Who would like to respond?
Mr. Crocker, I'm Stephanie Thorne. I did speak with you previously regarding, and I wanted to again apologize for the miscommunication that had you coming here on Thursday for the meeting that was today. Yes, sir. I did speak with her as well, and I want to offer our apology and also let you know that we are refunding the fare for that day. I will be speaking with you. You gave me some of your information previously, but I will be speaking with you regarding your service issues, and especially the issue regarding being picked up late and being dropped off. We talked about some of your drop-off issues. I will be discussing those with you afterwards, and I'll follow up with you tomorrow.
One more issue, please. About six times a year, I have an appointment to Georgetown University Hospital, and I get there on time, or I learn how to manipulate the system to get there on time, which is good. But when I being picked up on the times to take me home, I may be on the van. I'm being picked up about 12:30. I'm on the van for 5 hours. I don't reach my residence until about 6 o'clock in the evening. And that's totally unacceptable.
Okay. Go ahead, Seth.
Yes, sir, Mr. Clark. I do apologize for hearing about these service concerns. We are definitely going to discuss those concerns and try to see if we can rectify your service so that that doesn't happen again.
Thank you. Next person is Lamont Holbert. 3 minutes. Someone is going to bring you the mic.
My name is Lamont Holbert. Thank you, Ms. Outlaw. Make sure I get here on, you know, at the meeting. Ms. Karen Belby, you tell me the truth. All it is, wheat and money. All the business, groceries, is here, Metro Access train, all they're worrying about getting more money so they can go on a trip by a plane and all like that, like Trump. That's the truth.
Thank you, sir, for your comments. And next and last person is Beryl Leans, 3 minutes. If someone can bring him the mic, please.
On the microphone.
Hold on. On the microphone, because it's a part of the public record.
This excerpt of the docket that's available on the table outside makes it clear that it's available in alternative formats. I'm wondering, in fact, what alternative format is it being made for the blind? I was speaking to a friend yesterday and gave her the phone number that's listed on the front for the board secretary's office, and she said that she was going to call, but in fact, I don't know what response she'll get. Are the blind getting a braille version of the whole of the document, of the docket, which is, again, longer than the one I excerpted out here, or is it a cassette form? I'm just curious. Somebody can answer that later. I certainly hope everybody in this room, everybody in this region, will make it to this building on the 30th for the public hearing, and it may be too late with or without a draft of a letter that will be created between now and then for the AAC to weigh in. But the question of funding WMATA's operating, as well as its capital, but more so its operating budget, is not going to be resolved with this public hearing and this budget year. It will be an ongoing question for a long time to come, and I would like to think that the full committee, the AAC, might schedule at its regular monthly meeting or at a special monthly meeting a discussion of how the AAC could contribute its thoughts on how Metro's operating budget deficit for well into the future should be resolved. The business folks around this region are proposing a regional sales tax, and there seems to be some people, a number of supporters for that growing. I would argue that while that may be a good idea, it's not the best idea. I would love to think that the AAC might consider as an alternative, a regional commercial property tax, so that throughout the transit zone, the whole of the compact area, all this development that's taken place, which would be the appropriate source for a larger contribution to WMATA's operating needs as well as its capital needs, with such a regional property tax, dedicated funding sufficient to meet WMATA's needs could be created. The reason I wanted to ask to speak publicly, however, concerns Abilities Ride. It closed recently. I had occasion to sneak a question to Mr. Blake, and he said he agreed that it's closed. It won't be until April that the selection committee, the review committee, the procurement department will make some decision as to any award. But I asked him a simple question, how many respondents were there? And he said he can't tell me that. Maybe he feels he could not tell the Metro Access Subcommittee that, but I think that that would be an inappropriate answer. I think a whole number of how many respondents is not proprietary to any of the many or few respondents there were. Even some general questions about those respondents, how many indicated that they would provide Abilities Ride by phone as well as by app. How many of the respondents indicated that they will, as Diamond does, Mr. Worth, good for you, as Diamond does, have an employee-based relationship with the drivers rather than a contract relationship with the drivers? Those kinds of general questions, it would seem to me that staff here, Mr. Blake or Mr. Kent,
right,
or others could answer, and I would hope that either at the next MAX subcommittee meeting or at the next AAC meeting, if you're not talking about dedicated funding and a regional property tax, the AAC and its subcommittees will inquire from staff, middle-level staff, management. By the way, I do not advocate
right,
the stoning
thank
of Christian Blake.
We need to close. Thank you.
Shucks. I had
thank
a joke.
You.
I can't
thank
tell
you.
My joke. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Now,
on the microphone.
I can answer about the accessible format for the blind.
So right. I'll respond to both subjects he raised. On the accessible formats, what happens is anyone who wants alternative formats, they call my office, 202-962-1100, and we work with the customer. Each case, we deal with it on a case-by-case basis. Are we going to just automatically produce hold copies in Braille of the public hearing document? No, that's not the initial step. We wait to hear from the customer. Have your friend call my office directly. We see what the customer's alternatives are, and we then produce the document in the format that they can access the document. As far as the abilities ride solicitation, yes, it's closed. At this point, I don't really see a benefit, time or otherwise, in having theoretical discussions as to how many people bid, what they were offering, because at this point I can't talk specifics anyway. We took a lot of feedback from you all, as you all know. The solicitation is now closed, evaluation is taking place, and once the award is done, that's when we're going to have a little further robust discussion as to what will be on the street for your service and how we're going to go out and educate the customers on how to use the service. But further discussions at this point, in my opinion, do not further the process.
All right, right now I do see hands, but the thing I want to get back to and prize you of, Patrick, is right now we had a discussion about public hearings, some kind of AAC statement. And we're in the middle of a motion we were trying to massage out. In essence, the members would here would like to see some kind of statement of our viewpoints as an AAC before the February 6th deadline, when public hearing testimony closes, that everything has to go into them, and would like to see a letter from you with some, I guess, advisement with me working as a group. So we need to close on that.
If I can speak to that, so far the positions of the AAC as a whole have been that we do not want to see the Metro Access fares raised, and the remedies for this, and we've gone on record in the past on this, the remedies for keeping the fares at their current rate was to calculate it either twice the bus fare, which is our preference, or to change the the multiplier in the way the fares are calculated. And that we have made more arguments to twice the bus fare, particularly since the rail recently has been undergoing the issue as far as SafeTrack. And so we don't feel that the calculations that we get from the fare calculator are accurate. Now, we have said that in the past. We've taken that position as a committee, and those would be positions that I don't have any problem, and I have said them in the past. I think certainly Denise has heard me, and I think that you guys have also expressed the same things. So those are the ones that are on record, unless I've forgotten some.
So, Ken, as we were trying to craft and propose, not you're here, which is great, a letter with that level of consensus as to the talking points, expressing the view of the AAC, even though there's not an AAC meeting before the 6th, the idea is they want to get something in.
Let me ask you this, and maybe this goes back to a month or two or something. I think that those positions have been represented in board reports. And so if that is the case, then I think we can take those positions as those that have been issued in a board report dated blah blah, as positions that we currently hold and currently support.
And uses talking points at the public hearing.
And certainly uses talking points at the public hearings. And I don't, the only thing that I'm not sure that we came to a consensus on was exactly what we wanted to have as far as how long we wanted the stations open. I think that we wanted to have increased usage of the stations opened until later at night. I don't know if we said 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock. I do believe we are on record as saying we do not want to see stations closed along the route. And we wanted to have, the other point being is that as best can be done, we wanted to see bus routes supplant those routes that are affected when the rail is closed. I think those are the positions that we have taken generically as a group.
Now, Doris, go ahead, provide your feedback quickly, please, because we only got about 5 more minutes, and then we need to come to some kind of consensus as what we want to do for a letter. We already know we're just going to speak individually on the 30th, but as to what you're, you know, people are throwing out in terms of proposals. Go ahead.
One, process-wise, it is my recollection over this year that we have not taken a vote specifically on those positions as relates to this budget. So I think that there is a process issue. Not that it couldn't be a statement from the chair that reiterates the stance that we've taken until we meet together as a full committee. That's a process thing.
No, the AAC has taken a stand on that. We have taken the stand over the last couple of years on...
The last couple of years, yes,
we have,
not specifically as relates to this budget.
Yes, we have.
All right, well, that's fine. The chair can rule that, and that's fine. You are wrong about what I understand the position is on bus, because the position enunciated, and I thought that you all agreed with, was that bus service throughout the region should be augmented in order to feed the rail and get people to other places, not just paralleling the service on a particular rail line that is closing early or something, but rather that there has to be sufficient bus to feed the service. And that's what I thought you all agreed to, but if you say that you didn't, that's fine. But the last point I want to make is this. I don't think the process is being, but that's a dispute between you and you as the chair. However, making a statement for the full committee about what the real topic is shall the fares be raised and shall the service be cut back, is not addressing the issue head on. And the committee, as you have enunciated the positions here, the committee would not be representing any of us who use the fixed route service. Furthermore, it will not be addressing the solution to the whole damn thing, taking a position to not raise the fares, because if the fares aren't raised, Metro Access fares won't be raised either. And why are we afraid to take that position, especially since they've cut the service? That would be the position that I think should be first. And we did, a couple of years ago, take a vote to oppose increases in fares. But you know, when it got to the written comments that went to the board and to the presentation before the board in testimony at public hearing, it was never mentioned. It was never mentioned except that individuals made statements. And I think that's unfair for those of us. We are not being represented by this committee, the fixed route users, if you do this without including the issue at hand.
All right, so Patrick, how do you want to respond? And
so,
if you miss left,
I would respond.
Go ahead.
So I would respond that the committee is on record as its primary position that it does not want to see an increase in the fixed rail system. We are on record of that. Now, in lieu of the... hang on, Doris. In lieu of the fixed route system, so our primary position, number one position, is we do not want to see the fares raised. Now, in the four proposals that we saw, that wasn't one of them, but that was the primary position of this committee. Now, in lieu of the fixed route being, the fares for the fixed route being raised.
If they are raised.
If they are raised, which I think everybody realistically understands that they will be raised. In lieu of that, we have the fallback position regarding Metro Access is that we would like to see Metro Access stay at the same rate that it is right now. The preferential position that we would have would be to do the calculations at twice the bus fare, and in lieu of, if that is not acceptable, then change the multiplier in the fare calculation. Now, that's what I've said consistently over the last couple of years. I mean, that's consistently been our position. It has not changed over the last couple of years. Now, Doris, I will stand corrected. You said more elegantly than I did about the fixed route, particularly the bus system. So if you want to write that down and send me an email on that, I would appreciate that.
Sure.
Because you stated that much better than I did. And I think that your position regarding the fixed route on bus is much more to the point than I just stated. So I appreciate that.
So to come to consensus, Patrick,
yes.
Is it my understanding, so I can adjourn, is that you are going to craft the lever by the February 6th deadline with sort of a committee position on this,
mm-hmm.
on top of everyone making it, emphasizing, I will send an email out to everyone at least once a week into the hearing, urging them, as many AAC members, and to encourage members of the disability community to come to the public hearing to weigh in their opinions?
Right. Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
We'll do.
Mr. Chairman, so we have a motion on the floor, so we shall withdraw the motion? And
I think if Patrick is committing to do the letter, then at this point withdraw the motion.
Okay, so motion is withdrawn. So we just make a recommendation to Patrick.
Yeah.
That's registered in this meeting.
Hold on. I mean, the motion,
go ahead.
The motion did contemplate that we would request that WMATA would seek dedicated funding from whatever source to accomplish the goal of funding the system in lieu of the cuts that they wanted to make. And so I don't know how that gets represented in this conversation, but I think it's important that we ultimately do that because we have a responsibility. We have a right to say it's not working, but we have a responsibility to say how it can work.
All right. Oh, yeah. Oh, another person. Oh, yeah. One more public comment. So, Pat, what would you like to do? Then I had to get to one public comment and end this meeting.
That's fine.
So, we're going to do this letter, and people still going to come to public comment. And then, so we are going to incorporate what Charlie says into this letter.
I think that has also been the consensus of this committee, dedicated funding.
All right, so you will have this done and hopefully circulate this out to the committee in email so that we can look at it and discuss it in email before.
I sure
six.
Hope somebody took good notes. Will do.
Well, what you said?
Time frame,
Pat, when do you think you have a draft by for us to look at? If you have my assistance to help you write, prepare it.
Go ahead. Yeah, that works, Paul.
Okay.
I gave him Sunday night. Yeah, I'll be partying. Paul, get me something, and I'll get it out in about 3 days after.
We're going to discuss it. We're going to discuss it and have it, say, within a week, because we need to get this rolling.
Will do.
Okay.
Can do.
Does that sound reasonable to everyone?
Yep.
All right. The last person for public comment here.
Good evening. My
3 minutes. Thank you.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Oh, 3 minutes. Thank you. Welcome to the meeting because we need to close as soon as you're done. Thank you.
Okay, no worries. So my name is Sandra Sermons, and I am coming back yet again because I am continuing to experience some horrible service. Since we've last spoken, I've yet again been dropped off someplace other than my work site, driven around for hours. The driver decided that she lived in Germantown and didn't need to know anything about D.C. So finally, you know, reached out to dispatch. That didn't help. She's still driving me around. She doesn't know where she is, so therefore I can't help her navigate. 2 hours later, we're still driving around, and I finally had to get a colleague of mine to go out and search for the van, which was 2 blocks away from my workplace, and literally come get me off the van and walk me to my job site. In another instance, I was attending a concert, and my ride was a good hour late. Very cold outside. My hands had turned, they were numb, my lips were blue. When the dispatcher indicated, even though I told her that I was visually impaired, she still insisted that I had to see my vehicle, otherwise I'd get left. Basically, I got carded, no problem, I had my ID, but my hands were numb. So I asked the driver to assist with my bag, which was less than 5 pounds. It was only 5 pounds. Long story short, she decided she didn't have to help me with my bag. And I asked her to just, you know, I would take it as soon as I finished putting my seatbelt on. But rather than just waiting for that half an extra second, she proceeded to drop it on the ground. And with the comment, oh, I don't have to hold your stuff. Well, the bag contained my note taker. And in her dropping it, she destroyed it. Basically, she ruined part of the bail display. I've filed the complaint. I've, you know, done the requisite things, reached out, and still, I've had no remedy. Even the complaint process in and of itself, attempting to file via email, has been less than easy. It's been an ordeal. And I like you all and everything like that, but I don't really want to be a fixture at these meetings, but at the same time, the service that I am experiencing is getting progressively worse.
Thank you.
Okay. So we just want to just quickly respond. So, Ms. Sermon, you know, we've been working with you in terms of the accessibility of the complaint process, and we've established a reasonable accommodation for you and other customers who have challenges with the existing system while we fix that. And I know Mr. Schaefer is working along with Metro Access staff in terms of the service issues themselves. And you will be hearing from Mr. Schaefer through my office on the steps for the, not the complaint, but filing a... For the repair of your Braille reader, your Braille note taker, will give you the directions of how to file a claim, and if the claim is found, you will be reimbursed for your device. So we are working with you on it. We're sorry about the troubles you're having, but I ask you to keep working with Mr. Schaefer and Metro Access team on the service aspects and working with my office on the accessibility aspects.
Thank you so much. And
Could I ask one question?
I need to make a motion to adjourn at 6:10.
Paul?
Go ahead, Patrick.
Just one quick question regarding Sandra's complaints.
All right.
Sandra, we talked about this. Have we flagged your trips?
No.
Okay. Would you like them to have?
Well, Metro Access. Have you flagged the trips?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. The answer is yes. We have.
Okay.
Yes,
so, Sandra, the trips are flagged. I know that was something you and I discussed. All right, Paul. You have the floor back.
Thank you.
Paul, about just a question about this issue. I would like to see if the Metro Access Committee can have a presentation on what seems to be a repeated issue, and that's complaints about long rides on vehicles, extraordinarily long rides. That would constitute a violation of the ADA, and I think that we should have a presentation on it.
Thank you. It will be well noted. Thank you. Motion to adjourn. All those, please say aye.
Aye.
Yes. Yes.
an on-time performance number?
It's at 83%.
83, it's gone up a little bit. Okay.
83.6, something like that. But it's virtually a little bit up.
It took me 40 minutes to get here.
That's the fixed road.
What's that?
The fixed route fare.
Yes.
I think that's very well said. Doris
was good. Yeah, Doris was good. Yeah.